Welcome to the WBFO Press Pass, our weekly conversation with members of the local media. I'm Mark Scott. Buffalo News suburban editor Bruce Andriatz joins us to explore some of the issues making news in suburban areas. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Mark. Thanks.
Let's start with one of the big issues of this fall season that actually came to a resolution in the past week, and that's the suicide of 14-year-old Jamie Rotemeier, the student at Williamsville North High School, whose suicide attracted national attention. Jamie was the victim of bullying over his sexual identity. Apparently, no criminal charges against the students involved in the bullying, but an undetermined number were suspended.
Right. The Amherst police felt, and I think rightfully so, given the public outrage about this, that there needed to be a criminal investigation to determine if anyone could be held criminally liable for what had happened to him. But ultimately, and I think anybody who thought about this realized that it was going to be pretty tough to put what would have had to have been a teenager on trial for making comments, for bullying, essentially. And I think that what the police chief said when he announced that there would be no charges is they determined there was a lot of not very nice behavior going on toward Jamie, but nothing that would rise to the level of a criminal prosecution. And like I said, I think that's understandable, but I think that what happened after that within the school was appropriate.
The students are being held accountable with these suspensions.
Right. And that's, you know, once you realize that, you know, by the police definition, a crime wasn't committed, clearly something terrible happened to this young man. And obviously the bar is going to be much lower within the high school community than it is in the criminal courts. But the kids who did this, in addition to suffering from what I hope will be a guilty conscience for a long time, needed to be held to account for what they had done. And maybe even more important than that, I hope that other kids would understand that what happened to this young man, maybe it was not avoidable, maybe it was, but certainly anybody who examines them, their own conscience and says, did this need to happen? Did he need to be spoken to and treated this way? Obviously he didn't. And if that leads to some sort of change, not only at Williamsville, but among students in general, that's nothing but a good thing.
And yet, despite all the attention this attracted, just in the past week, we read about Kenmore East basketball players, female basketball players, engaging in some hurtful language.
I have to say that being in this business and having my shock meter over the years at a point where really not much does, this story absolutely blew my mind that students in a high school on a basketball team and sports teams at every level tend to be closer than maybe the rest of the student population. To imagine that anybody thought it was still appropriate to have a chant that involved one of the most detestable words in the English language, that was okay until a black student stood up for herself and said, I'm offended by that. It like I said, it just absolutely blows my mind. And it really makes me question really how far we've come.
And that leads me to think, you know, can we ever rid our society of bullying? Because these are children who don't have the sense of what's right and wrong that many expect them to have, even though they're teenagers. Right. They're still not really grown up yet.
You know, I think bullies will always exist, but I guess in my view of the world, and I wrote something to this effect not that long ago, I was starting to believe that we had become more sensitive about racial or racist language. I think that there's little chance that bullying will ever go away, but what this tells me is that even worse, stupidity is never going to go away. And, you know, teenagers, I think by definition, have to learn as they go along and they make a lot of dumb mistakes. But I really thought that in 2011, this is one that we didn't have to experience anymore. And I hope that the action that the Kenton School District and Kenmore East took against these kids sends a loud and clear message everywhere that this absolutely will not be tolerated anywhere.
Let's move on to another issue that affected the suburbs in recent weeks, and that's a fire administrator in West Seneca who will spend some time in jail after embezzling tens of thousands of dollars. There's probably little oversight in a volunteer fire departments. So is it surprising that we don't see more of this, that some really good people are working in these departments and they don't take advantage of a system that is ripe for abuse?
I think that's a good point. I think that really they are fire districts, fire departments are insular by nature. I mean, they are people who are volunteers who are working for the community, and they are conducting most of their own oversight. And we've seen a couple of times in the past few years that when people step up and say, I'd like to know where my tax dollars are being spent, it often leads to a major confrontation. It happened in Clarence. It happened in the town of Boston. I'm not sure if that's the case here. I don't know that anybody in West Seneca is suggesting that, well, we were not looking hard enough. Sometimes people get away with this because they're clever at hiding what they're doing. But I do think that, unfortunately, this is not the first time this has happened at a fire district. And I think that this is a situation where fire districts are going to start being painted with a broad brush. And it makes the case that they, I think, rightfully make that they deserve to be funded. They deserve to be recognized for the service to the community. The more things like this happen, the more I think people start to question, you know, maybe there needs to be a lot more oversight of what you're doing there.
With the publicity surrounding this, though, and the jail time this official is going to receive, is there a deterrent effect here?
Doesn't seem to be. I mean, I've half-joked many times over the years that we could run a standing feature in the Buffalo News called the Embezzler of the Week. It's not just a trend. It's a runaway phenomenon that people are embezzling and being caught routinely, and it's not just public officials, it's within companies, it's everywhere from top administrators right down to somebody who is just keeping the books in a church. I don't know if there is a deterrent. I do know that when an institution, a company, an entity is the victim of embezzling, once they find it out, their goal is to get their money back. Very often, especially in the case of churches and fire districts, they're not dealing with a wide margin, and so they need that money back. And I know the DA's office takes that into account and tries to make it so the accuser, the defendant, can get the money back for them. But you do wonder that, like I said, we see so many of these cases where the embezzler pays the money back and then does not have to go to jail. And I understand the thinking behind that, but I do wonder whether jail time, whether the threat of going away for a long time might deter some people. I don't know. We'd have to see more people go to jail before we would know that. And unfortunately, this gentleman is the exception. Most embezzlers are not going to jail.
In this case, the money was allegedly used to fund his children's college education. But in many cases, we see gambling associated with the embezzling.
I don't think it's a coincidence that we've seen more cases of embezzling as we've seen more gambling opportunities in Western New York in the past 10 years. It is a temptation. If you are the person who handles the money and you have a problem and you know that, well, just taking $20 here, $100 there probably isn't going to be missed by someone, you're going to have a better likelihood of doing it. And I think we need to understand that. We need to understand that there are people with a problem, and that's why every organization needs to have more oversight. Whenever something like this happens, what usually comes out is, especially in government, someone decides, well, we need to have more oversight of what this person is doing. We gave one person too much power. It's an important lesson. You know, checks and balances everywhere are good. When somebody's controlling all the money, somebody needs to be keeping an eye on them as well.
One more topic, and we're going to have fun with this. It's because it's related to your column of last week, and you're asking for reader input on some of the treasures in our area that have been here forever. And you cited bobolink, and you're right. That was around when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I'm not a golfer.
it's a terrific place, and what that whole idea came to me while I was playing there, and I played there a couple times when I was a kid. I think this is true of most places, but it's certainly true in Western New York that we spend a lot of time on what's not here anymore, on what we miss, and because we have a lot of things to miss. I mean, I could devote a column to that as well, or probably a year's worth of columns to that. But what occurred to me is we also are very, very fortunate in that there are a lot of treasures here that have not gone anywhere, that are not going anywhere. And again, not because somebody decided, well, this is worth saving, let's keep it here for future generations to look at. It's because it's still a success. Bobolink is still a success. The other one I mentioned in the column, I can't remember what it was now, that Louis Hot Dogs,
yes.
In the town of Tonawanda. There are lots of places like that. the places that when people move away that they miss, and when they come back they want to visit, and they tell their kids about it and say, this is where I went when I was a kid. The response to this, and I expected that it would be good, was even better than I expected. And I've already come to a couple of conclusions. One is that we have more beloved hot dog and ice cream stands in Western New York than I even imagined. I mean, growing up in the town of Tonawanda, I was a Ted's and Anderson's guy. But it's amazing to me the number of people who cited Reed's in Lockport or Taffy's in Orchard Park. They're everywhere, and everyone's got a favorite. So, of course, what I've done is painted myself into a corner where I'm going to have to choose one, and I'll have to get the hate email that follows. But it is going to be a lot of fun, and I look forward to doing it.
You know, I know you, this is not focusing on what has been lost, but this example is so fresh. Jimmy's hot dog stand at Harlem and Kensington. As of late as 5 years ago, I was still going there for breakfast on a Saturday morning, every Saturday. Knew the waitresses, the owner. They knew what I was eating then before I had to order. It's gone because of the roundabouts they put there.
Right.
But so sometimes you even something that you love and other people love, no matter what you do, it just can't be saved.
Absolutely. It's not. Unfortunately, it's more arbitrary than, you know, whether you're a success or not. Sometimes there's outside factors. And I think that's what makes some of these places that I'm going to profile that much more interesting. I mean, just, you know, using Louis as an example, Sheridan Drive has completely changed all around it. And there used to be a drive-in theater near there. That's gone. It's gone from being a heavy industrial area to still a lot of manufacturing jobs, but nowhere near what there once was, and yet it manages to survive. And it'll be interesting to see if there's a theme that emerges from what these places did that helped them to survive all the ups and downs over the years.
So will your column Tuesday have more on this, or future columns?
Future columns. The first one will appear in January, and I wouldn't want to give it away, but
sure.
I'll just tell you that I'm happy to see snow on the ground, because it's really dependent on the weather being wintry in Buffalo.
We look forward to reading that. And Bruce, all the best to you and your family for a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And thanks for joining us.
Same to you, Mark. Thank you very much.
The Press Pass on WBFO. I'm Mark Scott. Thanks for listening.